Welcome to Connecting the Diocese from the Diocese of La Crosse, Wisconsin, for this weekend of the third Sunday of Advent. My name is Jack Socia. We're calling this particular show, It's a Wonderful Advent, and you'll understand when we talk with Tom Thibodeau in just a few moments. For no reason that either of us can understand, we had difficulty with our system of talking via computer, so I switched over to using my brand new smartphone, and that didn't work. Well, then I went back to our old system of aiming a microphone at a speakerphone, and that did work, and it didn't sound that bad, and I think you'll enjoy the show. And that's a good thing, too, because had that not worked, I would have had to get two paper cups and a string. That just doesn't really have the same quality, but I think you're going to like this show, so stick around. It's a Wonderful Advent. Back after this. This past week, I was listening to a radio show that had, I guess what you would call a charitable giving advisor on, and they were talking about how if there was something that affected your life or the life of your loved ones in a good way or a bad way in the past year, you may want to focus on that to see how your charitable giving can influence whatever group or agency assisted in whatever way they did. And it got me thinking that it's also possible to simply take a look at what the Catholic Church refers to as the corporal works of mercy. Look them up. You know, things like clothing the naked, feeding the hungry, giving water to the thirsty, visiting people in prison, comforting the afflicted, things like that. It would be a good idea to go look at that list, maybe even print them out if you can, and just look at them and say, which one of these is the one that strikes my chord, that makes me think, yes, I really want to help this way. There's a real good chance that you'll probably find several of them, you know, sheltering the homeless, comforting the afflicted, feeding the hungry. Well, how can you choose between them? The good news is you don't have to. This is the foundation of the Catholic Church. These are things that are built in, or baked in, as they say. And so whether you give a donation to Catholic Charities or the Bishop's Annual Appeal, these good works of corporal mercy are put into action every single day in the Diocese of La Crosse and throughout the entire Catholic world. So a single donation to the Diocese of La Crosse will go over to Catholic Charities, to the Missions Department, to the local parishes, to food pantries, to clothes closets, to referral services for those addicted to alcohol or drugs. And of course, and as always, the amount of efficiency, the lack of overhead expenses keep this a very efficient way that your dollars get used with the most effect. So why not contact the Diocese of La Crosse for more information or call them up and they will direct you to the proper place for charitable giving. A simple process and very effective. Okay, let's get over to that conversation with Tom Thibodeau. It is a wonderful Advent. Tom Thibodeau, Distinguished Professor of Servant Leadership at Viterbo University.
Good morning, Jack. It's always good to be with you.
You know, I tell you, if it wasn't for the fact that we've got a really neat topic for you to talk about for this third weekend of Advent, someday we're going to have to do a talk about the day that technology collapses, because when that doesn't work, we get out the telephone and I aim a microphone at the speaker, which is kind of the way they've done it since 1946. But anyway, that's perfectly fine. I'm happy to have you here the third Sunday of Advent. By golly, how has your day been?
Well, it's very good. It's a Monday, and for the last 26 years, begin every Monday morning with praying at the Place of Grace. And so we're a group of people who are all kingdom seekers, serving at our Place of Grace in La Crosse, where we have been for 26 years. And we begin each of our prayers with a psalm: "The Lord hears the cry of the poor. Blessed be the Lord." And what has reminded us over these 26 years is of our own poverty, of our own need for God's grace and for the presence of the Holy Spirit in our lives, which provides us hope.
We are rushing through Advent. It seems like everybody, at the last minute, they say, oh, I've got to put the brakes on so I can enjoy this. And we keep trying to get people each weekend to say, now is the time to put the brakes on to enjoy this. And in my discussion with you as to what we're going to talk about, you left me this most enticing topic. You said, I want to talk about It's a Wonderful Life. Now, do you mean the movie, or what do you mean, Tom?
We'll get to that in just a moment. I want to want to talk about that movie that was made for us by Capra that has only become popular in the last 20 years, and it points to one good man, George Bailey. What do we understand about George Bailey is that he was a metaphor, a symbol, if you would, of hope. The virtue of hope is an attitude, an activity of hoping as a focus of attention. It affects us effectively and commits us to action towards a future goal. Hope is a disposition that embraces a future good. It is a commitment to the good of others and oneself. It's the antidote to despair. Hope needs to be nurtured in community. So what Capra did is, after coming back from World War II, where he had been making films, and during the Second World War, Hollywood turned towards making propaganda films in order to bolster the spirits of the soldiers, as well as to confront our enemies who were saying all kinds of evil things about us. And Capra came back, and he creates this wonderful film of George Bailey. And George is growing up in a family where his father was at the savings and loan, and then his father dies. Well, George had hoped to travel the world, and then his father dies, and so George takes upon the work of the savings and loan, staying in this small, a little town. And he feels in some ways that his life has been diminished, and yet he falls in love and he gets married and he raises a family and makes the savings and loan a place where dreams come true. This is what was happening after World War II. The American dream was to build your own home. This is the beginning of suburbs, and community had to grow up around that. And if you watch George throughout the movie, he's providing loans to people who ordinarily would not get loans. When the bank crash came in the 1930s, George springs into action, and he and his partner, who's played by Donna Reed at that moment, gives the town money from their own savings that they were going to use for a honeymoon that they never took, so that they could help the ordinary citizens, their brothers and sisters, maintain during the Depression. Well, his adversary is Mr. Potter, H.H. Potter, and George, his name is chosen by Capra, George Washington, a good strong name. Let George do it. And Bailey, what is he constantly doing? He's bailing people out with that small savings and loan, bailing people out, helping them pay their bills, helping them raise a little bit of money so they're able to put down money on a house. Potter, on the other way, is crushing people, wants to take over their lives, much like Potter's Field, in which pots that were defective were crushed and thrown into a field where nothing would grow. And so here is George Bailey and his nemesis, H.H. Potter. Well, then what happens is, as the film goes on, George's uncle loses that deposit, and then Potter wants to foreclose. And George, at that moment, just falls into despair. He's begging for his dignity. He's begging for his family. And Potter, of course, laughs at him. What's really extraordinary about this is that it's not people who are mean and bitter and cynical who fall into despair. They spread despair. It's good people who work so very hard. The reason I'm emphasizing this, how many of the people that are listening to us, Jack, have worked all season long with their farms, have raised the food that's going to feed the world, have taken care of their crops and their animals, the very source of our background in rural America, which, of course, supports the whole country. And how many times when a farmer comes up against it and says, I don't know if I'm going to have enough money to even have a new crop for next year. It's good people who work so very hard that oftentimes question themselves. And George finds himself on a bridge, and he doesn't know if he can live any longer. He's fallen into despair. Despair, as Thomas Aquinas said, is a sin against the Holy Spirit, because at that moment, you're not able to receive God's grace. And what happens is that God sends an angel, if we remember Clarence, the most unspectacular angel that one could ever hope. He's an angel second class. And Clarence finds himself right there on the bridge next to George. And George is talking about ending his life. And what does Clarence do? Clarence jumps into the river. Clarence knows that deep down in the character of George Bailey, he cannot help himself but to save the life of another. Clarence risks his own life so that George will jump in and save him, and they're both of them are saved in the process. How many times do we see that? People who are down in their luck, people who have had hard traveling themselves, all of a sudden start to question themselves, and yet they have an internal strength that allows them to become generous of spirit and give back to others. Well, George reminds us that each of us has that capability. Each of us is sustained by an indomitable sense of hope. And there he and Clarence are trying to dry off after having been in a cold, icy river. And George is still convinced that he's now the victim of the spirit, that his life is better if he was dead rather than alive. And Clarence gets this idea, and he says, "Hey, Peter, do you think it will work?" And he's talking to St. Peter, of course. And he says, "All right, George, you never lived." And so he takes George back in terms of his life, and he begins to recognize, what would the world have been like if you had never lived, George Bailey? And his brother would have died in a childhood accident, and the pharmacist would have given out a pharmaceutical that could have killed a young boy, and people would not have had homes or small businesses. And he takes him through, and he sees how the village would have been called Potterville after Mr. Potter, who had taken over everything, and most people were living in despair because it was Potter who was setting the tone. And then George begins to realize everything that he had contributed in small ways. But what had happened was this. George has left his family on Christmas Eve. His wife, Mary, who loves him unconditionally, realizes her husband is in trouble, and she calls together the community. George returns home, and here the community comes through the door, giving everything that they had in order to make sure that the savings and loan was able to pay his debt, that Potter would not overtake this good man who had sacrificed so much for the common good. George, like us all, is saved by love. George, like us all, is dependent upon the goodness of the community, the company of strangers that when we least expect it, come to our aid. And the whole community gathers. And cynicism is wiped out, and it is dominated by the hope that comes from the love of family and the goodness of community. And this is where Copper says, it's a wonderful life. Well, interesting to note that when he made the film in 1946-47, it was a complete failure. He thought he had written this beautiful movie and presented it well, and people didn't want to see it. They're coming back, and they want to see war heroes. They were interested in terms of, you know, fighting and winning the war. And so Capra never makes another feature film. In the 1980s, Ted Turner begins to buy movie classics and starts showing the movie It's a Wonderful Life on Turner Classic Movies. And what happens? A whole generation rediscovers the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. And now it has become a Christmas standard. And film critics say that technologically, in terms of the script, the acting, it's one of the best movies that's ever been made. Isn't it amazing? It's a Wonderful Life has staying power. Why? Hope never dies. For a lot of years, I've been telling people that my favorite commercial starts like this. "Hello, my name's Tom Baudet from Motel 6. And then Tom Baudet goes on for 25 seconds explaining all the reasons as you might want to stay at a Motel 6. But then that last line's a dandy, isn't it? Remember, we'll keep the light on for you. A lot of people traveling in darkness. A lot of people feeling like they have no one that they can trust. And yet, we'll keep the light on for you. Our own scriptures tell us the people who have walked in darkness have now seen a great light. In the midst of darkness, in the midst of winter, we have the hope of Christmas, God becoming one of us, a holy family. We are all saved by the love of God. We are all saved by a community who comes to our aid, particularly when we are most vulnerable. Hope. We all need people that we can belong to, knowing that being with them is coming home. Isn't it wonderful that our God made the choice of taking up residence within a human family? Our God wanted to love and be loved. Our God became a child, like a small, innocent child that stirred the hearts of peasants and visitors. And that young child, Jesus, stirs the hearts of all of us yet today. I find that to be hopeful, Jack.
I was thinking about the movie, and I was thinking about a couple of current movies that are out, and also the many, many renditions of Dickens' Christmas Carol that are made into movies. Right now, people criticize the Dickens versions, and rightfully so. He was writing a story that was really a social commentary. He was not writing a religious epic. And consequently, the mentions of God and Jesus in it are practically nil, because that was not what he was planning on doing. And then right now, there are two movies out, one which is in the rounds of the theaters right now called Spirited, and which is put out by Apple Movies, which is a musical rendition, modernized, crazy, kind of funny Christmas Carol type thing. And there's a second one, which the title is incredible because it is a current pejorative for people who are nasty. It's called A Christmas Karen. And I must admit, I laughed when I heard the title. Both of these movies, like the Dickens version, are not religious movies at all. They are both current social commentaries, not unlike that movie called Don't Look Up that came out a few months ago about the folks just not paying attention to the asteroid coming to Earth. But I can't imagine that either one of these movies, as much as I got a giggle out of each one of them, will last 10 years. Because 10 years from now, one's going to say, what do you mean, A Christmas Karen? And there's all the in-jokes in the other one that people will simply not get. And yet here we have a movie that came out in, like you say, 1946, 1947, that is spanning the ages practically.
Again, it's a commitment to a good greater than himself. But what he wanted to recognize, and you see in this movie, is of how this country after the war really comes together in our neighborhoods and in our small towns. It's a story of a number of different immigrants who kind of found that American dream of having your own home, a safe place in terms of a neighborhood. What's also interesting is that his own Catholic faith comes through. And so George and his wife, Mary, go to the home of Mr. Martini, and they bring him a loaf of bread and a jug of wine and salt. Well, these are sacramental symbols of the Eucharist, or salt was oftentimes used as baptism, the place on the tongue. Well, to understand that your life is going to have some levels in terms of bitterness, but that there's a greater gift, and the whole community kind of comes to celebrate with Mr. Martini. Well, to have a home, to have a place where you belong, to be a member of a community, these are lasting themes. It's not enough just for Scrooge to be changed. Scrooge had to change his system. He had to be more fair with Bob Cratchit. He had to give him a living wage so he could care for his family. It's not just about an individual. It's about the impact that we have in a community. And George, of course, when you're doing these kinds of things, you have no idea. Much like Jack, I don't know, some years ago you began as a journalist, as working on radio. You have no idea the number of lives that you've impacted. You have no idea of the things that you've said or recounted that lifted the spirits of other people. None of us do. Here's a short story that can maybe capture some of this. There was a farmer who grew excellent quality corn. Every year he won the award for the best corn. One year a newspaper reporter interviewed him and learned something interesting about how he grew it. The reporter discovered that the farmer shared his seeds with his neighbors. How can you afford to share your best seed corn with your neighbors when they are entering in competition with yours each year? The reporter asked. Why, sir, said the farmer, don't you know? The wind picks up pollen from the ripening corn and swirls it from field to field. If my neighbors grow inferior corn, cross-pollination will steadily degrade the quality of my corn. If I am to grow good corn, I must help my neighbors grow good corn. So it is with our lives. Those who want to live meaningful and well must help enrich the lives of others, for the value of a life is measured by the lives it touches. The quality of response and joy depends on the quality of thoughts and love we share and spread. Those who choose to be joyful must help others find happiness, for the welfare of each of us is bound up with the welfare of all. Those who have walked in darkness have seen a great light, and that great light comes from a community who gathers together for the greatest good. Think about it for just a moment. In the city of La Crosse, there are over 3 million lights now in Riverside Park that are put up and tended by 3,300 volunteers, people who come out in mid-November and will be there through mid-January setting up the park so visitors may see the bright lights along the Mississippi River. And there is no charge, but people are asked to bring a canned good if they would, maybe a little bag of food to help for our food pantries. All those people who keep the light on providing food that will feed people through March. How extraordinary that is. Just recently, over 4,000 people were served a community Thanksgiving at La Crosse Center, but that was repeated also in Onalaska and Holman and in church basements and legion halls across the state, particularly the people that are listening to us in each of their communities. The community gathered so people would not have to have Thanksgiving by themselves. In each store, each mall, each workplace, there's oftentimes a giving tree where people take the name of a child and they go to the store and they buy a gift and carefully wrap it so that children whose parents do not have much money are not left out of the celebration of Christmas, that they too may have joy. Think of the people who each and every day are delivering meals on wheels, making sure that our beloved elders have enough to eat and a bit of a conversation. Look at the number of organizations, including our own Catholic Charities, that make sure that people have warm coats and mittens and hats, a warm place to stay on a cold night. Think of our churches where people each and every Sunday put money into a collection or bring a donation so that the least of our brothers and sisters are cared for and prayed for. Think about how our own Holy Father has asked us not to forget the people of Ukraine. We had problems with technology today, Jack, but people in Ukraine go 16 hours a day without enough electricity to keep themselves warm. And you begin to recognize that each of our lives is dependent upon the goodness of others. Peace on earth, goodwill to all people. It's this goodwill that comes at the time of Christmas when we need it most.
Talk about Ukraine. This current December issue of Catholic Life magazine is going to be featuring Valentina, who began a pro-life mission to Ukraine years ago and has been caught up with the war to change the nature of her mission and has been entrusted literally with millions of dollars worth of medical equipment because she knows how to get it into Ukraine successfully. Who would have thought this young woman in her 20s would have been put in a position like that? And my goodness, to read the story in the magazine, it should be hitting the stands, I mean the back of the church and getting into your mailbox pretty soon. But wow, what an adventure for her and all of the people, as you say, that will be touched by her, who will never know who she is, never know what she's done, never maybe even know how this stuff got to them, but will be benefiting from it. What a remarkable story. That's going to be in the December issue of Catholic Life magazine.
But it's the power of hope. You know, what we've been taught by the saints. It is better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. To hold up light, to draw people together, to give them an understanding that there is possibility. And of course, you need that in the midst of darkness and the people of Ukraine. How about the people of Poland and Romania who have gone to the borders to take in Ukrainian families, giving them a safe place to live and to eat and for their children to go back to school? I think about this each and every day, the people who work in refugee camps across the world, making sure that children have food and water and are given an access to education, creating hope. The one who plants the tree rarely sits in its shade. So it's a vision of a future that is yet to come. It's not about optimism. It's good to be optimistic, but if it happens, it happens. But with hope, there's a level of conviction, of a lifelong dedication that the world is God's world. Augustine in the 4th century said, hope has two daughters, anger and courage. We must be angry with injustice and have the courage to change it. And I think of Father Joe Walieski and how his good work now is being carried on by Father Joe Hirsch, both of them living with the children of Lima, Peru, in most desperate situations. Most of the children had no hope until they met those two fine priests who invited them to come and live at Casa Hagar. Isn't it extraordinary? Could Joe Walieski, a man who many seminaries did not want to consider for priesthood, until he came to the Diocese of La Crosse. Do you think of anybody who is more improbable then this Polish priest who works in the slums of Lima, Peru, who ends up being visited by the Pope, who wanted to see the witness of this Polish priest. How extraordinary is that? And that work continues on. Here at Efetterbo University, we celebrate the life of Sister Thea Bowman, an African-American young girl who comes to La Crosse, Wisconsin, from Mississippi. And in coming here, she had to get permission from the railroad to ride in the passenger car with two sisters, because at the time she came, black people were relegated to sitting in the baggage compartment. Could you imagine her coming to this community at age 16, finishing her high school, then her college, going on to get her a doctorate in English literature and becoming a spokesperson not only for her diocese, but for black Catholics and all Catholics. And just an improbable story of hope, proclaiming a point at what you might never arrive. She's known for this as her vision. Each one, teach one, walk your talk, let your light shine. And that's the legacy that people of hope lead on, give to all of us. Today, may each of us let our life shine.
You know, you're talking earlier about how maybe somewhere someone heard something that was said on this program that influenced them. It's pretty interesting to go from Augustine to Paul Harvey, who, of course, was more of a showman than a theologian. He was on nationwide every day around noon. And I remember years ago playing Paul Harvey in Menominee, my little station there. And he did a thing, and it was not original. He didn't plagiarize it. This was something probably out there that he picked up somewhere, but he refocused it. And you may have heard this story about the farmer, and there was an early winter storm, really early, like maybe in October, you know, before you would normally get it. And he was very concerned because the migrating birds were caught. They were in the trees. You know, you could hear them that time of year yelling and screaming in the trees and making all that noise. They're supposed to be heading south towards warmer. But this winter, terrible winter ice storm hit early, and they couldn't go anywhere. And they were flying around panicking because of this ice and the snow and the cold that was going to kill them. And this farmer said, well, you know, look, I'll open the barn door. I got this warm barn here. They can fly into it. And he opened the barn door, and they didn't go in because they didn't know what to do. They were scared. They were panicking. They were terrible. And this man, who, you know, was not a particularly religious fellow at all, he just thought to himself, he said, if I could just become one of these birds, you know, I could go into the barn and show them it's safe. And that's when he began really seriously thinking about Christianity.
Also here, metaphorically, one of the Jewish understandings of the presence of God is warmth in the midst of our lives. Isn't that wonderful? Warmth in the midst of our lives. You know, the understanding that God wants to provide us relief, warmth, and comfort, a safe place where we might gather. You know, so all these point to possibilities of hope when we raise up this level of goodness. Rather than falling into the despair, one of the things I'm most fascinated by right now is of how many young families are turning back to traditions of simplifying Christmas, not having big, long lists of things that we want to buy, but recognizing that we need time together. Just recently at Viterbo, we had a celebration of carols and festivals at St. Rose Convent. Oh, my goodness gracious. And the young people in which they sang and the violins that played, and Father Conrad Turgansky telling the stories of St. Francis, who, by the way, is the first one to kind of introduce us to the Christmas creche, wanting to make sure that the people of the village of Greccio experienced what it might have been like on the first Christmas. And at the end of the presentation, there was a prayer from a woman in our community who is from Ukraine, and she prayed for peace in the Ukrainian language, and the whole church was quiet, and then the choir burst into song, Joy to the World. See, that's what's really extraordinary, is that where there's hope, there is joy. And so many people who feel like they're traveling in darkness right now are hungering for a community where they might experience a modicum of joy. We talk so much about anxiety and depression, and that's very real. So many people suffering from that levels of darkness, but hungry to be part of joy. And I don't know of anything that's much more joyful than people coming together and singing. I don't know what's much more joyful than Christmas Mass. I don't know what's much more joyful than people who are committed committed to a good greater than themselves.
I was recording Jack Felsheim for the show that ran this past weekend about Advent things and his family. And one of the things that is going to happen this Christmas Eve at the cathedral is that his entire family, his wife, his kids, are all singing together in the choir. And he just says it is the most, he can't wait. It's the most fantastic thing they can possibly do on Christmas Eve is to be part of a choir. And every single member of the family will be there singing. You know, some singing alto, some singing soprano, some singing tenor, etc. I was quite frankly just thinking, you know, you're absolutely correct. Boy, what a wonderful moment that's going to be.
When we sing, our voices blend together. When we sing, we don't focus on our difference. When we sing, we're looking for experiences of harmony. When you sing, you have to know when to rest, and you have to know when to belt it out. I mean, it's an extraordinary metaphor, and blending our voices together isn't extraordinary. We have all kinds of stories throughout the centuries of people who are enemies coming together, and in the midst of war, stopping and singing Christmas carols. Then in World War I, people crawling out of their trenches and coming forward and sharing the packages that they had from home, sharing pictures of their families. I mean, this is documented, and it came from singing together. For many years, my brother would have a Christmas out at his farm, and his neighbors are Amish. And after we've had our Christmas dinner, kind of a potluck of all the Thibodeau favorites, he'd say, "Now, come on, put your coats on." And we got our coats on, and we go over to his neighbors who are Amish, and they have this large table and 10 children, and the Amish family sits on one half of the table, and the Thibodeau sit on the other half, and the Amish family sings all their favorite Christmas songs in German, and we respond by singing those same songs back and in English. Here we are coming from two different cultures or faith traditions, but together our voices blend together. And together, our last song of the evening is always Silent Night, Holy Night. All is calm. All is bright. When we blend our voices together, God's peace reigns.
Speaking of peace reigning, I was spending a few minutes a couple of nights ago. I went over to the Smithsonian website, where there's an awful lot of artwork and things you can just look at or download. But also, they have an audio archive there. And I do not remember the name of the person who did this in 1983, but he got a grant from some organization to do this. He made it would be called an LP back then, but he made two sides of an LP, so it's an hour or so, of a piece called Invocation. And what he did was he went all over the country and the world recording every religion he could find and everybody he could find doing the invocation of their religion, and he mixed them all together. And they overlap each other, and you know, some are in English, some are not in English. Some you can recognize as being Catholic, some perhaps you can recognize as being Jewish, some are in some language you've never heard of. But it is not the kind of thing that you're going to put on, you know, casually for dinner music, but if you listen to it, it weaves a spell of all these people from all over invoking the name of God in their own particular way. And you can download this thing. I think it costs like $6.98 to get an MP3 download of the whole thing. And it's called Invocation. And one of the most remarkable things I've heard of in a long time that I had never heard about.
There's messages of hope throughout our communities, and all we have to do is pay attention, listen to their story, listen to the ways in which they gather, talk about their rituals. Studs Terkel, one of our great journalists, I'm sure that you are a big fan of Studs, who also had a radio program, much like yourself, would just go down and stand at the bus stop and interview people in Chicago. And it's just amazing the number of things that he learned. He has a marvelous book called Working, in which he would just ride in the buses in Chicago and interview people who are going to work. Now, in 2004, one of his last books was called Hope Dies Last. And he talks to people from all walks of life throughout the country who are hopeful people. And he writes, "Hope has never trickled down. It has always sprung up." That's what Jessie De La Cruz meant when she said, "I feel there's going to be a change, but we're the ones who are going to do it, not the government." With us, there's a saying, "La esperanza muere ultima." Hope dies last. You can't lose hope. If you lose hope, you lose everything. And what the great gift that we have as Catholic Christians is to provide hope. In the midst of darkness, we proclaim light. In the midst of despair, we proclaim hope. In the midst of apathy, we say love. And I think this is what we put our nickel down. And our families and our communities are all changed because of it. And Jack, what you do so well each and every week is to remind people of what we are called to know, love, and serve God in this world and the next.
You're talking about simplicity this season, people turning to simplicity. I went over to a local area craft fair where people from numerous communities around me had all gathered in this building called the Fest Building. And this thing was actually rather large. I mean, it was a big operation. We, for a very simple reason, we do not have an indoor Christmas tree with ornaments on it because, quite frankly, for our resident four-legged friends, it becomes a giant cat toy. And, you know, we just don't do it. We put some things up outside, lots of lights. We put lights in the house. But we've had to come up with something else besides a traditional tree. And I went to this craft fair, and there was a flat wooden tree, green wood, handmade, that hung on a little hook so you could hang it up on your wall, and it was pretty good sized, and you could hang ornaments on it. And I went, this is perfect. We can hang up the ornaments. Here is a wooden-type tree, green, and it's high enough up that the cats can't get up there and wreck everything. And it turns out, I talked to the lady who was selling it. It was a whopping $10. And she mentioned that her husband had just built it last night. He had just made it. So I took it home. My wife was delighted. I happened to have to go back into town. So I went back to the same lady. And I said, I got to tell you how much my wife thought this was just tremendous. I said, close your eyes when I produce this thing. And she goes, oh, great. Here's my husband. And I got to meet the man who built it the night before. This was on a level of experience and fun and warmth far better than going into a big box store and buying something that was made in some factory a long ways away that has no connection to you. So if you do happen to be able to go to a craft fair, do that. We're going to mark the date on the back of that wooden tree to remember when we got this thing and what the circumstances were with our way too curious cats.
Well, it is true. And what happened in this, there's a level of reciprocity and mutuality. The gentleman enjoyed making it, but then you made it a gift by receiving it. See, so often what we do is we buy presents. Then we buy presents and we say, well, if you don't like it, here's the sales slip. You can always return it. That's buying presents. But gifts are given freely and received freely. My mother suffered with depression. Postpartum depression, and when I was in high school, she was in and out of a psychiatric unit, and so it was difficult. And my dad, when it was appropriate, would take us to go and visit my mother at the psychiatric unit, and this one particular Sunday, she was happy. And we were so glad, because oftentimes we'd come and she was so sad or be crying. But here she was happy to see us, and she had just come back from a walk with three other women who were at the same psychiatric unit. And one of the women, her father lived in that town, and he was a widower. And they went to his house, and he was so excited to see his daughter and her friends that he ran back into his kitchen and had a plate of homemade oatmeal raisin cookies that he had just made. And he said, would you like one? Oh, Dad, she said, I'm trying to cut back. Said the second one, would you like one? Oh, really, I had such a big brunch, I can't. Third one, would you like one? No, I'm just too full, thank you. And my mother said, I watched the man's face fall. And he said, would you like one of my cookies? And she said, can I have two? And could I take two with me back to the hospital? And the man ran back into his kitchen and put two cookies into a napkin. And she handed me the napkin, and she said, son, remember this. It's in giving that you receive, but it's in receiving that you give. Jack, by going back and meeting the woman for a second time and talking to her husband, you gave them great joy because you received what they offered in love and friendship. A $10 green tree, I think it was a whole new relationship. And this is what happens. There's a mutuality that takes place in giving and receiving. We are all available for receiving the love of God, the joy of the Holy Spirit, the hope that's provided by being part of a community. Our question, are we open enough and humble enough to receive what we've been given?
You probably have some family traditions that you cherish every year. Can you tell us a couple off the top of your head that you like to do each year that you're looking forward to?
Well, when we all can gather together, it's a great gift. And we have a daughter who lives in New York now, and a daughter in Madison, and a daughter in Chicago. And so we try to begin our holiday with gathering at Thanksgiving, where it's easier to travel. And our Thanksgiving then prepares our heart for Christmas. What's marvelous about Thanksgiving is that we share dinner with each other. We share stories with each other. We play games with the grandchildren, all get a chance to know the history of their family and our background. And then the next day, we try to extend that, taking the little girls with us. And this last year, it was to downtown Chicago. In past years, it would be coming to La Crosse to see Rotary Lights. But how to extend Thanksgiving that moves us into Christmas. And I think that's one of the things that begins to happen as you get older and you think about gifts. You think that everything you have is a gift. And so we try to nurture gratitude, particularly at this time of the year, which then it carries over throughout the rest of the time. And I would say if we have anything that's a ritual, it's gathering together and holding hands and praying together before we have our meal. And now the children, 5 and 7, are the ones who are leading us in prayer. And then I would just share this very personally. This year before Thanksgiving, our 7-year-old granddaughter fell and broke her leg. She was ice skating. Last year, she was learning to ride a bike. She fell and she broke her other leg. And then when she was about 5, she's on a swing set and broke her arm. This is her third broken bone in 4 years. And so the little girl's in trauma and despair. Because she was hurting, she had a cast on up to her hip. Her dad got out a stroller. We didn't have a wheelchair yet, and decorated it with Christmas lights. But we all became that much more gentle and patient and loving. See, her fragility brought out the best in all of us. My insight, God comes to earth as a baby, a child born into poverty, laid in a manger. And the story reminds us of the fragility and vulnerability of God that makes us all that more precious to each other. And it's the fragility and the innocence and the goodness of children or our beloved elders that calls forth a gentleness and a graciousness that changes us.
You know, I'm going to try to carve out more time between now and Christmas to do what I'm always doing in my office. I'm going through my stuff, and I'm saying, do I really need all this stuff? As one clutter person book writer said, look at something, and this object that you have stuck in your drawer, does it bring you joy? And I add to that, maybe if I can give it to someone else, they will get some joy. And I've given away a number of cameras and other things to young people who are interested in photography, and it gets it out of my house. I got too much stuff. Most of us do. Just think of the joy that a lot of this can give to you. If you just drop it off at a Salvation Army store, St. Vincent de Paul, one of these places where they have little chits where people who have just moved into the area or their house had a fire or whatever, they can pick up coffee makers or fry pans and all kinds of stuff. What joy that will give them, and what joy it will give you knowing, A, they're being helped, and B, you have more room in your house. This is my new philosophy these days.
Yeah, what is it? It's making space for the guests, which is the wonderful gift of hospitality that you share with everyone that you talk to, and particularly, Jack, the way in which you listen to people so carefully. You create space for them. Well, less stuff, more space.
Yeah, that's true. And like I say, I'm trying to just, when I hit a point where when I try to find something and I can't find it because other stuff is in the way, then I know it's time to get rid of things. And I've really been working on that pretty hard. We're trying to get, and also not junk. If you're going to give something away that you would still keep and use. That's makes it a real, real gift, not just something you're disposing of. Well, you know, it looks like, Tom, we have managed to burn up a good portion of this hour. I like to put a little Christmas Advent music on as well, just to kind of top off the hour. I haven't quite figured out what it's going to be yet, but I will listen to you and listen to the show as I edit it and find something that I think is good and appropriate. And I should also mention to people that if you hunt around, I think it's archive.org, you can find the radio version of It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart and all the rest that they had produced for radio use, because back in the day when that came out in 1946, movie theaters were not quite as everywhere, and certainly no one had, you know, iPads to watch it on. So you can actually find a radio version of it, which is actually quite good as well.
It really is. And again, what it leads to is hope, how important and significant it is in all of our lives. I'll close with this quote from Elie Wiesel, a Jewish Nobel Peace Prize laureate of 1986, and he writes this: "I have learned two lessons in my life. First, there are no sufficient literary, psychological, and historical answers to human tragedy, only moral ones. Second, just as despair can come to one another from other human beings, hope, too, can be given to one another only by other human beings. Jack, thank you so very much for each and every day of the year being a witness to hope. You are a gift to us all. May God bless you and your family with Christmas peace. Thank you very much for having me as your guest this week."
It is always a pleasure to have you on, because you all have something to say to give people to think about and contemplate this Christmas, and also maybe to step back and realize just how darn lucky they really are. So Tom Thibodeau, Distinguished Professor of Servant Leadership, we will talk to you again in the new year, okay?
Thank you very much, Jack.
The basic understanding of all of this is Christian teaching, that we are made in the image and the likeness of God, that God created us. God had a plan in creating us. No one of us is a mistake. No one of us is an accident. If there's a bunch of people who believe in that, these people can change the world.
That was a quick quote there from Bishop William P. Callahan, the Bishop of the Diocese of La Crosse, that was recorded a while back, that I do like to play every once in a while just to remind people what we're all about here on Connecting the Diocese. I don't know how many of you are closely following the NASA Artemis program, the great large rocket that someday hopes to return humans to the moon, and also is kind of a test precursor of a lot of technology for perhaps not that much later, getting people to the planet Mars. Since we're moving close to Christmas, I want to play for you just a few seconds of something extraordinary from 1968. The Apollo 8 spacecraft, this is the one that went to circle the moon, was in space, orbiting the moon at Christmas. And this is what they broadcast back to Earth.
We are now approaching lunar sunrise. And for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness.
And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. Let it divide the waters from the waters." And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning the second day.
God said, "Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear," and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called these seas. And God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night. Good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good Earth.
U.S. astronauts in space, circling the moon in a tiny, fragile little craft all those years ago. at Christmas. We'll be right back after this. I think it's a good time for me to mention that these radio shows are also archived in several places. The primary one is the Diocese of La Crosse website, and you can just go to Connecting the Diocese. You'll find links to it right on the diocesan website pages. The other thing is they are also put up onto, I believe it's iTunes and other podcasting media. But the most reliable way to hear the show again is to simply go to diolc.org/connecting. And you can then either just listen to the show, or you can download it if you wish to. There's no charge. You don't have to register. You don't have to belong to any club. There's nothing to pay for. They're just there for you to hear. And basically, if you can reach the internet and you can go to that particular URL, I don't care whether it's a phone, a tablet, a big computer, a laptop, whatever it happens to be, you will be able to play back the show. So, for example, if this particular show with Tom Thibodeau is something that you really liked and you'd like to share with somebody, you can either direct them to the URL so they can hear it on their own computer, or you can actually download it and give it to them on a USB stick or just play it on your computer when they happen to be over visiting. The shows are organized with the most recent one at the top, so you'll have the latest one that we've got ready and a brief description as to what it's about. Now, especially this time of year, just because the show runs on Saturday and Sunday doesn't mean necessarily the show will be up there on Saturday and Sunday. It might take Monday to get there, maybe Tuesday. Things are kind of busy right now, but sooner or later, it will be up there that following week. Again, if you go to diolc.org, which is the diocesan website, you can follow the links to it, usually via the bishop's page. Or if you are really good at writing down things, you can go to diolc.org/connecting, and that will take you directly to the page. Again, you don't need a special app. You don't need to register. We don't ask you for passwords or your email address. You just get to go there and enjoy. And thank you so much for listening. Sing a song of gladness and cheer, for the time of Christmas is here. We're not quite at Christmas, but we are kind of in the time of Christmas, the third Sunday of Advent. That was a British movie, Scrooge, and that was the main song from that, from the 1970s. Next week, something very special, inspired by this week's show. Tom Thibodeau did such a wonderful explanation of much of the symbolism of Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life movie that I was inspired to get out the audio version that was actually a radio play with the same actors from around 1946 or 1947 and do a little bit of cleaning up to make it sound really respectable for current broadcast. The same actors in the film did the radio version, all sitting around a microphone with scripts, Jimmy Stewart and all the rest. It's an excellent opportunity to really listen to what they had to say. Also, if you're busy in the kitchen getting things ready and putting them in the freezer so you haven't got to cook them on Christmas Day, you can just listen to this thing as you're working. For some people who are not familiar with this kind of broadcast, a radio drama, a great opportunity to exercise your imagination. That's coming up next week on Connecting the Diocese. I'm going to leave you with one of Bishop Callahan's favorite songs for Advent and for Christmas, Of the Father's Love Begotten. The opening stanza reads, Of the Father's love begotten, ere the world began to be, He is Alpha and Omega, He the source, the ending He. Of the things that are, that have been, and the future years shall see, evermore and evermore. My name is Jack Socha. I will catch you next week, same time, same station, and thanks for listening.
Of the Father's love begotten, ere the worlds began to be, He is Alpha and Omega, He the source, the ending, He. Of the things that are, that have been, and that future years shall see, evermore and evermore. O that birth forever blessed, when the Virgin full of grace, by the Holy Ghost conceiving, bore the Savior of our race, and the babe the world's redeemed. Revealed His sacred face, evermore and evermore. This is He who sits in all time, chanted of with one accord, whom the voices of the prophets promised in their faithful word. Now He shines the long expected. Let creation praise His Lord evermore and evermore.
Let the heights of heaven adore Him, angel hosts His praises sing.
Tongue on earth be silent, every voice in concert ring, evermore and evermore. Christ to thee with God the Father, and the Holy Ghost to thee, hear and chant and high thanksgiving.